You are listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Freeman, Matt at the Oracle of the Action Network and RotoViz. Welcome to the April 17th, 2018 NASCAR edition of On the Daily. I'm joined by Dr. Nick Giffen, an owner of RotoViz, a PhD in mathematics, a three-time qualifier for the DraftKings NASCAR main event, and one of the best NASCAR DFS players in the world. You can follow him on Twitter at RotoDoc. Nick, how's it going?
Hey, Matt, I'm doing great. It was a lot of fun this past weekend. I went to Long Beach for the IndyCar Grand Prix. That was a fantastic race. We were up at the top of the 17th floor of the Hyatt, so on the roof. They are inside the track, so we got to watch the race from all the way up there. It was super cool. It was free drinks, and well, I guess that was part of what we paid for the ticket, but open bar, we got breakfast and we got lunch, and we got to go down to the pit in the paddock area. It was a lot of fun. So it was a super cool weekend, and I was still able to get all the NASCAR coverage done on Saturday there for you guys, and ended up, I guess, being an okay weekend if you look at it from the big picture. We'll talk about that, obviously, a little bit more.
All right. Just living the dream over there. It's pretty yeah. Nice.
It was nice. It was my wife and I. It was our anniversary present to ourselves, kind of delayed by a month or so. But we didn't find anything we wanted to do in March for a trip, so we decided to make Long Beach our trip. And we got really good deals on everything. Direct flight on JetBlue from LAX, or from Las Vegas to Long Beach, not even LAX. Was pretty nice. That definitely beats the drive there for sure.
Yeah, awesome weekend. Okay, Bristol. It was a wild event. It started on Sunday and finished on Monday. Multiple multi-car wrecks. Kyle Busch in the end ended up winning, taking the lead with six laps to go. Nick, how was the DFS portion of the weekend for you?
Yeah, it was interesting. I thought it was going to be a huge weekend. And it ended up being a very small loss, but it kind of fits right into my philosophy of lose small, win big. I was very happy with my process this weekend because, like I said, I mean, basically the whole race I was up, looking at the live. You know, most people shouldn't even look at the live standings or whatever because it's always bound to change. But I like doing it. It's fun. And I was up big for most of the race until Kevin Harvick made his comeback there at the end. He got a fresh set of tires when a lot of people stayed out, and that let him charge through the field. The reason he did that was because he ended up having a loose wheel there. So had Harvick, who was like 40-something percent owned, continue to have a problem or had a problem very late in the race or anything like that, it would have been a monstrous weekend for me. Instead, it turned out to be a small loss because he was extremely highly owned. But I think that's exactly how I want to play it. I'm very happy with going underweight on Harvick there when he's 40-something percent owned, $11,500 price tag, and you know, he did start dead last, 39th. So obviously it was a very safe pick, but I thought given his price tag, if he didn't dominate, it would be very hard for him to end up in the winning lineup. And we talked about this on Road of His Live that, you know, if he didn't finish better than his projected average finish of around 15th, then it would have been tough for him to be in the winning lineup. And, you know, he still finished, I think it was 7th or 8th, something like that, which going from 39th to 7th is very good. But even then, it was right on the borderline of you know, whether he'd end up in the winning lineup or not. And so I was very happy with the decision to go underweight on him. Obviously, he beat his projected average finish both in the sim scores and in the model. And in that case, he ended up doing a little bit of harm to my day. But other than that, it could have been an awesome day.
All right. Well, as you mentioned, Harvick did pretty well. He was in 64 of the top 99 lineups in the $250,000 Gladiator. He wasn't, though, in the actual winning lineup for the contest. Talk about the winning lineup.
Yeah, so and that kind of, in a way, justifies the Harvick fade a little bit because going underweight on Harvick a little bit because he wasn't in the winning lineup. Yeah, he was 42.2% owned, but he was in about 64-65% of the top 100 lineups. So right there on the borderline. But the winning lineup actually was Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch, who I wrote up in my article both as top plays. Jamie McMurray, who I wrote up as a cash game play. He went from 31st to 19th. Then the other three plays were pretty interesting. You had Jimmy Johnson, who started 17th and finished 3rd. I talked about him just a little bit on Road of His Live, and I figured with a lack of buzz around him, he ended up probably becoming a pretty good play. So I think I had 50 lineups. I think I played Jimmy Johnson in eight or so of those lineups, which would make me about 16% on him. So I was slightly overweight on Jimmy Johnson compared to the field. He went from 17th to third. Funny thing is, last year in the first Bristol race, he also won Bristol on the Monday after a rainout on Sunday. So he seems to do pretty well on these, the spring Bristol races that get rained out there. But started 17th, finished third, and was low owned, only 11.5% owned. So I was overweight on him at about 16%. David Reagan, he was in car number 38. It was priced really nicely at $5,400. Super great price, and he started 23rd. The great thing about David Reagan, he was fastest in final practice. He had the number one speed in final practice, and he had one of the top, I think it was 13 10-lap averages in final practice. If you look at second practice, which was also after qualifying, same thing. He was right up there in the top 15 in both single and 10-lap speed, given he started 23rd. His teammate Michael McDowell was inside the top 15, top 10 even in those times as well. So Front Row Motorsports hit on something this weekend, and both had very good cars. Reagan started 23rd, which gave him more place differential potential than McDowell. So he ended up in the winning line, a great punt play at $5,400. And then Ricky Stenhouse Jr., a very interesting play. I couldn't bring myself to fade him, and I couldn't bring myself to hammer him. So I was almost identical to him in the field. I think I had him in seven lineups of 50, which would be 14%. And he was 13.8% owned. So Ricky Stenhouse Jr. started fourth and finished fourth. And normally you think, well, that's not enough to get somebody in the winning lineup because there's no place differential. Yeah, he gets 40 points for finishing position, but he picked up 30 fastest laps. So that gave him another 15 points, and he was priced very nicely at $7,600, which allowed you to get, you know, Larson and Kyle Busch and Jimmy Johnson. So that ended up as the winning lineup. The second most winning lineup I thought was a very chalky lineup, and I did want to talk about that really quickly. It was also Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson. That made sense. The next driver after that, is Kevin Harvick, of course, was in that lineup. So Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Kevin Harvick. And doing that, getting three super expensive guys, you had to go double punt with Landon Castle and Corey LaJoie. And those were the two punt plays I was all over. They both ended up in the second highest winning lineup. I obviously didn't have this lineup together because otherwise I would have finished third. I just thought it was going to be really chalky because it was a very obvious construction. So even though Castle was 9.8% owned, Corey LaJoie was 7.5% owned, it was just a chalky construction. And you can actually see that I think this lineup was shared by about 13 or 12 people. So it did end up being a pretty chalky construction there. And then Ryan Newman was the final piece of that puzzle there. He got 57 DraftKings points. He started 30th and finished 10th. And I wrote him up as a pivot off of Jamie McMurray. So it was interesting because McMurray ended up in the winning lineup with only 37 points. And Newman ended up in the second highest lineup with 57. And that's just because of the way things shook out with Kevin Harvick there. So really the key piece was Harvick going to have a big day or not this weekend? And that affected the winning roster construction. Had he not had the day he had, Kevin Harvick, they're getting 79.5 DraftKings points. I think I would have had a monster weekend.
All right, looking at Bristol, did we learn anything for the rest of the year going forward, and then maybe specifically for the second Bristol race?
I think one of the cool things about this weekend was the Saturday race was supposed to be, the temperatures were supposed to be in the 60s, like 60, 65 degrees, or sorry, the Sunday race, I mean. And they did end up racing there a little bit, and the high line came in. So there was a couple of grooves of racing. And then, of course, the rain came, washed away the rubber, postponed the race to Monday. And Monday's race was like the highs were in the low 40s, 42 degrees, I think, was the race temperature on Monday. And so we actually got to see the difference in the handling of the cars between 60, 65 degrees and 40 to 45 degrees. The cars are a little bit looser, a lot faster. The cooler temperatures means the cars go faster because there's more grip available to them. The air is denser, so the air presses more down on the cars. So there's more downforce as well, which that more downforce creates more grip because the tires are being pushed harder into the surface. It makes them go really fast, but then also makes them really loose because they're fast. And the top groove did not come in as quickly whatsoever. So that bottom groove with the PJ1 or the VHT or whatever it's called these days, that compound they put up to, you know, make it a little more tacky and to get that bottom groove working, really the bottom line was just dominant there. So, of course, the second Bristol race is going to be the night race. Very often it's cooler than the fall race, but we had unseasonably cool – spring race, I should say. We had unseasonably cool temperatures here. So we'll have to see – remind ourselves going forward, and I've actually already set an alarm on my cell phone for this, to remember to talk about temperatures for the next Bristol race. I think that's going to be pretty important.
All right, good feedback there. Each week over at the Action Network, you write an article with your picks to win. Can you talk about how they did this weekend?
Yeah, it was possibly my worst weekend of picks, but that's because it's Bristol, and I was trying to take guys that I thought had very good value relative to their odds, and it just didn't pan out for almost any of my picks. I did say it was good to play either Kyle Busch or Kyle Larson as a parlay with your favorite prop bets, and if you did that, you probably had a pretty good weekend anyway. They're just so low. You know, they were priced so low. I think Kyle Busch was plus 215 and Kyle Larson was plus 450 approximately. And that's extremely low for a race that's as wild and as random as Bristol. I mean, Kyle Larson actually spun out. He got lucky. He didn't hit anything when he spun out, but he clipped the corner of Ryan Newman's car. It was his fault. He kind of came down on Newman out of the turn, spun himself out, and luckily didn't hit anything. And that just goes to show anything can happen. At the start of the race, Kyle Busch's car was absolute junk, and he wasn't dominating the race at all. He was terrible. And had that race ended at halfway, Kyle Busch wouldn't have won. You know, they fell 40 laps short of making it to halfway on that original rain out there. So I was very happy with, you know, kind of fading the top two and just saying play them as with your, you know, your prop bets as parlays. And then the other five drivers I picked just didn't end up having like the best weekends. Eric Jones was plus 1200. He was very good. He was leading it or near leading at one point neck and neck with Kyle Larson as they ended the, you know, the Sunday portion of events. And then on Monday, he just kind of faded from there. Carr was not very good. And let's see, I had Joey Logano also at plus 1,200. He had an up and down day. He, like Kevin Harvick, put on a fresh set of tires late and made some moves late, but was never really a winning car there. Let's see, I had Clint Bowyer, who the interesting stat there with Clint Bowyer is that you know, half the time he'd finish eighth or better. And once again, Clint Bowyer pulled off a top eight finish at Bristol, but exactly eighth. So it wasn't good enough. And then let's see, who else did I have? I had Kevin Harvick at plus 1650. Obviously, anytime you get Harvick at those odds, I just think it's a good play. And he didn't contend for the win, but he did, you know, press into the top five at points. I thought maybe there could be some strategy implications there. And then, of course, I also had Denny Hamlin at plus 1200. And Hamlin looked like a threat to win until a loose whale derailed his day. Loose wheel derailed his day, that was tough to say, and put him two laps down. He did end up getting back on the lead lap, but just, you know, too little too late there for Denny Hamlin, who had the loose wheel very late in the race, and that cost him two laps. He also had it under green, whereas Kevin Harvick found out his under yellow, which allowed him to come in and pit a second time and stay on the lead lap there. So unfortunate circumstances, but still pretty happy with the process overall.
All right. Obviously, there is a race this weekend at Richmond, and we're going to talk about that. But before that, I need to remind everyone that you can get a 30% discount to a special NASCAR pass through our NASCAR podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast. With that pass, you get unlimited access to all of Nick's premium NASCAR content, and your subscription supports the pod. Also, if you are subscribing to the Rotoviz NASCAR package, you have access to a lot of great tools and data that can help you figure out what's likely to happen in any given race. With all of the research you're doing, you should place some NASCAR bets at mybookie.ag. They have a lot of future bets and head-to-head props for each race, such as Martin Truex Jr. versus Kevin Harvick, or Logano versus Keselowski, or almost any other combination of drivers. I bet a number of these props each week successfully, I might add. And you know that I know next to nothing about NASCAR. I'm just using the RotoViz tools to make these bets. You can do the same, and if you know something about NASCAR, then all the better. I love playing these MyBookie props, and I think you will find that it is a fun way to leverage your RotoViz subscription. So join MyBookie now, and they will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Use the promo code NASCAR to activate your offer. So that's visit mybookie.ag, NASCAR. You play, you win, and you get paid. Nick, at this moment, I should also mention to everyone, which is maybe the most important part in the entire podcast, that we have reduced the price to the season long pass. So what did it used to be?
Yeah, it used to be the season long pass was $149. We have now reduced it by $30 to $119. Of course, if you're listening to the podcast, you know there's a way to get it even cheaper.
That's right. So the 30% discount now means $84 for how many races? 28 races?
Yeah, 28 races. I said $28 races on the outline because I'm dumb. But yeah, 28 races, which means exactly. If you don't even need a math PhD to do this. Just take 28, multiply by 3, and you get 84. $3 per race, exactly, if you use rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast to sign up for the rest of the season.
All right, sweet. So everyone, just let your money flow. Go to my bookie, make a lot of money, and then, you know, subscribe to RotoViz for the rest of the
season.
It's
synergistic, man. They go hand in hand.
Exactly. Okay. I think this is the first Saturday night race of the season. Am I wrong?
You are correct.
Yeah. So Saturday night racing. What could be better than that? Who could want more? So we have the race at Richmond International Raceway. It is a 0.75-mile D-shaped flat oval, different from any other track on the circuit. Talk about the racing that we normally see at Richmond.
Yeah, and I should clarify, this is my fault, but it's called Richmond Raceway now. They removed the international, so now we're just, I guess, national. But it is, yeah, it's a very unique track. It's a D-shaped oval, kind of like Michigan and Auto Club are, but those are two-mile tracks. They're highly banked. And very wide. Richmond, a little more narrow, especially through the turns and flat. So requires a very different skill set, also very different aero package. You know, obviously you don't need to go 200 miles an hour at Richmond. You're probably going into the corners 170 something miles an hour, maybe 180 if you're reaching the end of the front straightaway. But even then you're braking a lot because you're going into the corner of a flat track where the banking normally helps you turn. Richmond's a flat track. You need to do the car to do a lot more of the turning. So you need to get wowed down. You need to have good mechanical grip. You need to have good downforce at Richmond to make it through these corners here. So it's tough to pass at Richmond. It's just like a lot of the flat tracks. It's tough to pass, but I think it's even tougher to pass at Richmond than some of the other, I wouldn't say all the other flat tracks, but maybe something like Phoenix. It's certainly tougher to pass at than Phoenix. So track position is going to be very important at Richmond. It always is. And other than that, it tends to be a pretty tame race. We'll talk about this a little bit later in the show, but there isn't a whole lot of wrecking. There isn't a whole lot of craziness that goes on at Richmond. Just because it's a little bit different in the way that, you know, wrecks happen versus a track like New Hampshire or a track like Dover, where we sometimes see the front straightaway just get blocked and cars just pile into each other. You don't really see that at Richmond because it's more like the D-shaped oval. So certainly a unique track to NASCAR, but it makes for an interesting race anyway, because you'll have a lot of nose to tail racing and, you know, from the lap traffic and things like that.
Okay. What other tracks can we use to gauge performance at Richmond?
Yeah, I did mention Phoenix, and I think that is the most comparable track, the one that people use the most. And it is definitely an appropriate comparison. But Richmond, I still think, is unique, even relative to Phoenix. Just it's a little tighter in the turns. There's obviously not the situation on the tri-oval portion, the D-shaped portion of the oval, where you can dive down and cut the corner like you can at Phoenix. So drivers can cut that off at Phoenix. It's its own unique track. You can definitely use all the short flat tracks. If you want to even use the bigger flat tracks, you can pull some of that data in. I will say one view of the data I do look at is looking at just the short flat tracks, which are Richmond, Phoenix, Martinsville, and New Hampshire, versus all of the flat tracks to see how they impact driver performance. You know, when we look at statistics for the model, that view always takes me a couple extra days, so I don't have the short flat versus all flat breakdown yet, but we will have that for the Friday podcast. I'll be interested to see how, you know, whether all the short flat tracks matter more for Richmond than all of the flat tracks. My hunch is with Richmond that the short flat tracks matter than just all of the flat tracks. But with Phoenix, there was some of both that got pulled into the model. So we'll just have to see. But by and large, I think Richmond is pretty unique. The closest comparable is Phoenix, and I think you can use some of the short flat tracks as well, just in general, to kind of gauge performance at Richmond this weekend.
Okay. Richmond is in an interesting position. So in the past, the second Richmond race was the final race of the regular season. Is there a difference in the DNF rate between the spring Richmond race and the fall Richmond race?
Yeah, and of course the reason you're asking this is because when it's the last race before the playoffs, drivers that are desperate to get in or not to fall out can do some crazy things, possibly. At least anecdotally, we could think that. And we all remember the old Clint Bowyer spin to help Martin Truex Jr. get in the playoffs, and then Michael Waltrip Racing got penalized to essentially the death penalty. They had to stop racing basically after the following year because they lost all their sponsorship. But by and large, actually, these DNF rates aren't that different. They're also pretty low. So if we look at this Richmond race, which is the spring Richmond race, there is only a 9% DNF rate going back to 2013. And I say that because that's when we started the Gen 6 car. But only a 9% DNF rate going back to 2013. One of the lowest, if not the lowest, on the schedule. If we go to the race that's just before the playoffs, it's still only a 13% DNF rate. So still very low. And when I say DNF rate, I'm not just talking about drivers that actually DNF'd. I also include drivers that finished behind or the drivers that DNF'd. So, like, let's say, Jamie McMurray blew an engine on lap 395 and didn't finish, and somebody was still on lap 380 but running. I count them as a DNF anyway because they obviously had some serious problems. So I have a way of keeping track of drivers who not only DNF'd but also had major problems in the race. And so we really should say, instead of the DNF rate, the major problem rate at Richmond is only 9% for this race and 13% for the spring race. Even if you just say they're not statistically significantly different, which you can actually do a statistical test and show that they are just barely statistically significantly different. So there is a statistically significant DNF rate. It's not really a practical DNF rate, 9% versus 13%. Pretty low DNF rate here at Richmond. So you can kind of just average them together and say it's about an 11% DNF rate or major problem rate. And that's very low for Richmond. But yeah, even at this race, especially, there's a statistically significant lower rate than at the other Richmond race.
Okay. Those low DNF rates make it seem as if Joe Dirt Cheap drivers would perhaps be less viable because they would be less likely to move forward because not as many of the actually good drivers would be crashing out. Does that seem accurate?
Yeah, exactly. That does seem accurate. Like, compared to Bristol this past weekend, you had major wrecks that involved Ryan Blaney when he was leading, Martin Truex Jr., a lot of big names crashed out at different points. You know, Brad Keselowski ended up crashing. There was a lot of big names that had problems. This past weekend at Bristol, you're not going to see all of that craziness almost surely this weekend at Bristol or at Richmond. So all those big name drivers aren't going to fall out and then just, you got your Joe Dirt Cheap drivers that just kind of survive in advance. You know, like your Corey LaJoie last weekend, who we talked about, ended up in the second most winning lineup this past weekend, or Landon Castle. They're not going to move up from 35th to 25th or 35th or, 29th to 20th or anything like that. They're probably going to move from 35th to 31st. So it becomes a little less viable for these drivers. So we're probably going to go with a more balanced construction this weekend. Now, of course, if crazy things happen in qualifying or whatever, that could change the balance of the way we play the slate, just because if all of the expensive drivers are super awesome plays, then it definitely changes the balance. So like this past weekend, Harvick was a good play. A great play at his ownership percentage. I thought maybe being under 40% on him made sense, and I still had about 25-30% of Harvick. But this weekend, it might be that Harvick becomes because there's if he was in the same position as last weekend at Bristol, maybe instead of me saying 25-30% Harvick, I might say something like 50-60% Harvick or something like that, just because this race there's – or even higher possibly, just because there's less mayhem at this kind of a track.
Okay, what are some of the key stats that you were looking for at Richmond to gauge driver performance?
Yeah, I think the stats are pretty interesting this weekend. And like I said, we still have the one split that I need to look at that always takes me a little bit longer to code in because I only do it for the short flat and the large flat tracks. So, but this weekend, really, we're looking at track position. Track position is so important. So starting position is actually a factor in the model. It's often not, because where you start is usually not very indicative of where you finish. But in Richmond's case, it shows up in of the top 30 models, it shows up in 24 of them, and it's the 24 highest models in terms of accuracy. So the six lowest models, it doesn't show up in, but they're also the six lowest in terms of accuracy. So starting position, very important this weekend. And that means quality pass percentage is going to be important. So actually, when I ran the model, I always run and try to do the filtering of the data the best that I can to find the best, most accurate predictive model. Track quality pass percentage in the past comes into play. So Richmond's quality pass percentage in past Richmond races. So looking back maybe 3 or 4 years at Richmond races, how have drivers done quality pass percentage? So that means, are they making passes and are they able to make passes further forward in the field? That's very important because track position is so important. 10 lap average, very important. Single lap average doesn't show up at all. So definitely 10 lap average. And we will get lots of 10 lap averages because it's a 0.75 mile track. So should be a very reliable number this weekend. And then the two other things are, how have you performed this year? That shows up very significantly. And then the final thing is, what are your fastest laps as well this year? So not just driver rating, but also how you've been turning fastest laps. And I find that one a little bit harder to explain. I don't really have a necessarily good explanation for it, but I think it just means drivers are fast. I think it's kind of like driver rating, but it's a different way of looking at it. And I think what it kind of means here with Richmond is, because there's such a low DNF rate, if you turn a lot of fastest laps, you're right on the ragged edge. That could sometimes cause you to finish a little bit lower if you overdo it. But here at Richmond, it's pretty hard to overdo. That's the best explanation I have for it, but it does make the model more predictive. But essentially, year-to-date driver rating, year-to-date fastest laps is what we want to look at for the kind of the driver quality portion, aside from the Richmond quality pass percentage.
Interesting. You mentioned long run speed in practice as something that's important. Both practice sessions this weekend are before qualifying, and presumably teams will be making qualifying runs in one or both of those practice sessions. So how does practice before qualifying impact the way that you are gauging practice?
Yeah, so I actually think it doesn't at all, and hopefully it influences people to look at single run speed or single lap speed and get influenced by that, and maybe skew some ownership percentages. But we shouldn't be looking at single lap speed at all for a couple reasons. One, it's not a significant factor in the model, and two, sometimes some of these teams might be doing qualifying runs, and so it'll skew how we look at things in terms of practice, single lap speed in practice. So focus on 10 lap speed, focus on long run speed. Obviously, there will be a few teams that don't make 10 lap runs. What you can generally surmise about those teams is that, A, they're probably not happy with their car because they haven't stayed out for a long run, so they've kept having to bring it back in for adjustments. And B, what we can do with those teams is we can use what's called the combined practice average, which, again, is taking the single lap speed from all the practice sessions, averaging them, ranking all the drivers, and then using that as kind of a fill-in for 10 lap speed. It's not as good, obviously, but at least it gives us how has the car been more consistent or less consistent in short run speed over multiple practice sessions. Not as good, but I suspect with Richmond being 0.75 miles, we'll get almost every driver doing 10 lap runs here. So what you can, like I said, what you can generally get from this is, if a driver doesn't do a 10 lap run, probably not as happy with the car, but make sure you watch the practice sessions. That's going to be the best way to understand. Check out, the interviews and things like that. Follow Twitter. You always want to do that every weekend anyway, but I think maybe at Richmond it could be a little more important this weekend for those drivers that end up not making 10 lap runs.
Okay, who are the top tier drivers who fit the bill in terms of the key stats for Richmond?
Yeah, so it's a pretty interesting weekend for the top drivers, because I think a lot of them fit the bill pretty well. So if we look at past history at Richmond here, and again, we want to look at quality pass percentage as one key statistic. The driver that leads that is Kevin Harvick. I wouldn't be surprised by that generally at all, because we also know how well he does at Phoenix, and we did say Phoenix is the most comparable track, so Kevin Harvick should be pretty good here. Brad Keselowski always shows up nicely at Richmond. His teammate Joey Logano is fourth in quality pass percentage, and so this might be a good weekend to get on Logano. Logano's had a lot of success at Richmond. Average finish of 4.5 over the last 8 Richmond races. 66.5 quality pass percentage is good for fourth, and third is Kyle Busch. So those drivers right there make up the top tier. Even if we just cut it to the last 2 years of Richmond races and we look at quality pass percentage, you see kind of the same names: Kyle Busch, Keselowski, and then Harvick ends up down there in fifth. And then Logano's a little bit further down, but I think that's probably because of that second Richmond race last year, where he just wasn't as strong. The whole second half of his year last year just wasn't as good. But if he's back on track, I think he could be a viable driver anyway. So a lot of the same guys showing up at the top, top tier drivers. And then one name that we didn't mention there was Martin Truex Jr.
All right. Interesting. Not mentioning Truex. Who knows? We might come back to that later. I don't know. Okay. The drivers who are in the middle of the field, who are the guys who stand out based on the key stats?
Yeah, well, one guy that shows up for sure is Erik Jones. So Erik Jones, he, in terms of his quality pass percentage, it's not great, but that's because there is a DNF there. If you remove his DNF race, Erik Jones, 73 quality pass percentage, finished sixth in that race. So he should be pretty good this weekend. Maybe Kurt Busch always shows up in these views, and I guess you can kind of count him in the mid-tier because he's usually in the 8K range. Kurt Busch, if you remove DNFs and just look at since 2016, the past 2 years, or even if you keep DNFs in for him in his case because he didn't have any, 68.5 quality pass percentage, which is good for fifth over the past 2 years. So very good for Kurt Busch. And then he actually moves to fourth if you include DNFs because some other drivers had DNFs and he did not. If you go back to the last eight races, he's still fifth in quality pass percentage over the last eight Richmond races, so 64.3. So Kurt Busch. Erik Jones show up very nicely, and then Jamin McMurray actually shows up nicely in the longer history as well. So there's three guys in the 7 to 8K range that I think we can focus on. You know, maybe somebody like Clint Bowyer shows up a little bit less. Eric Almirola shows up less. So these drivers also had unique situations where Eric Almirola was at Richard Petty Motorsports for the past several years. Bowyer, in the longer view, had that 1 year at H. Scott Motorsports. So. A little bit tougher to gauge there, but by and large, Kurt Busch, Erik Jones, Jamin McMurray show up nicely.
Okay. Finally, who are the guys, based on the key stats, that you might be looking to avoid at Richmond?
Yeah, I think there's some interesting names to possibly avoid this weekend. Two names that I thought kind of really stood out, at least in the mid-upper tier, are Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney. Neither of them have shown very well at Richmond over their careers. If you look at Chase Elliott's quality pass percentage, 38.1, it's way down there. I mean, it's behind like Kasey Kahne, it's behind Larson, McMurray, Kurt Busch, et cetera. Some names that he probably should normally be ahead of. And then Blaney's down there even further at 21.9 quality pass percentage, which is actually only 19th best among all drivers this weekend. I will say, though, quality pass percentage at Richmond isn't the only thing we should look at. We should be looking at this year form, and Blaney definitely has been showing up this year relative to Chase Elliott, who is not. So I think Chase Elliott is a pretty strong fade candidate early in the week. Obviously, if we see practice times, that can change things. Whereas I think Blaney is maybe less of a strong of a fade candidate because he's been so good this year. You look at Blaney, he's sixth in the point standings. Chase Elliott, 22nd in the point standings. Obviously, Elliott has had some issues with crashes and stuff, and he's raced better than his point standings, but he still hasn't raced as well as Ryan Blaney this year. So those two names were something to maybe avoid. Obviously, Martin Truex Jr., it being where his price tag we expect him to be. We're of course recording this before prices come out, but maybe another fade candidate as well. 52.3 quality pass percentage, and hasn't been the top tier driver this year. Obviously, he's won a race, but I think Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch have been a little bit better than him this year. So if we're comparing him to Harvick and Kyle Busch, he doesn't have the track stats to back it up. He doesn't have this year's stats relative to those drivers to back it up. So probably a fade candidate early in the week as well. Martin Truex Jr. and Chase Elliott were definitely two drivers I'm eyeing to fade.
Okay, so again, this is the first Saturday night race of the season. Given that, what is your content schedule for the race?
Yeah, so content schedule should be pretty interesting because qualifying will close all of the Cup Series track activity. There's no track activity on Saturday for the Cup cars except the race. So after qualifying, everything will be done. We'll know everything. So I'll run the model after qualifying. I'll write the article after qualifying. And then I suspect with the Action Network betting article, it'll probably take until after the Xfinity race for them to post lines. That's usually what happens. There's an Xfinity race or a truck race after, and they wait until a couple hours after that race sorts itself out because there might be some betting influence from the Xfinity race. So that would be like that race would probably end around 9 Eastern. And then it'll probably take a couple hours after that. So it could be very late on Friday night or early Saturday morning that we get the Action Network betting article up for Richmond. Everything else should be done by Friday night. RotoViz Live, I probably will record, just because there's so much going on Friday night, we'll probably record Saturday morning at some point, after I wake up. So maybe 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, but that'll give you plenty of time, because that's still noon Eastern. It'll be posted. And then, you know, that's still, 6.5 hours before, the race, and normally do RotoViz Live 3 hours before the race. And it'll probably be, I'll just get your questions on Twitter and record it again, just because of the, you know, the shortened schedule this weekend. It'll be easier than trying to figure out a live show where everybody's happy with. So just, I'll post it as early as I can. And that way you can watch it at your own leisure at rotoviz.com/live, of course, behind the paywall there.
Sweet. And that is going to do it for this NASCAR edition of On the Daily. For Nick Giffen on Twitter at RotoDoc, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. The Oracle. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguabo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.